Sam Bankman-Fried has been sentenced to 25 years in prison. And lawyers are gearing up for a legal fight over the Baltimore Bridge collapse.
What we've got here, this is one of the biggest ever machine insurance losses. It's very complicated. There's lots of different types of claims, including for things like businesses that have lost revenue, the port itself, clearing the wreckage. So it's a very complicated situation.
Plus, why a bond reclassification might be raising your electricity bill. It's Thursday, March 28th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. FTX founder Sam Bankman-Fried has been sentenced to 25 years in prison for fraud tied to the collapse of the digital exchange. Last year, a jury found him guilty of stealing billions of dollars from FTX customers and defrauding investors and lenders to his crypto investment firm, Alameda. Cryptocurrency reporter Caitlin Ostroff has more on his sentencing today.
Judge Louis Kaplan, who's been presiding over the trial, said that 25 years felt like a fit sentence, one that wasn't overly burdensome, but that fit the severity of the crimes Bankman-Fried was convicted for. And he also added on that, you know, one of the things that weighed into his thinking was that Bankman-Fried committed perjury when he testified before the jury. And he also spoke about the risk of Bankman-Fried basically committing similar crimes or attempting to commit similar crimes in the future, and how the way that Bankman-Fried thought about risk and the testimony of others from the trial who said that he took these very kind of calculated risks of what he thought could be really good bets, even if they could also end up disastrously, meant that Bankman-Fried still posed risk of doing similar crimes again if he re-entered society too soon.
Federal prosecutors said Bankman-Fried committed one of the greatest financial frauds in U.S. history. Today, in a 20-minute statement before he was sentenced, he said, quote, "I'm sorry about what happened at every stage." House Republicans are moving ahead with another attempt to remove Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas from office. Speaker Mike Johnson says the House will formally transmit articles of impeachment to the Senate next month. The House impeached Mayorkas more than a month ago on a second try, alleging he willfully refused to enforce the nation's immigration laws. Mayorkas denies any wrongdoing, and bipartisan legal scholars have criticized the effort as baseless. The push comes as border policy has been at the center of election debates. Republicans want to highlight their disapproval with President Biden's record on immigration ahead of this fall's election. The U.S. government is changing the way it asks about race and ethnicity on future census surveys and routine forms like applications for student loans or cash assistance. Respondents will now have seven categories to pick from, including, for the first time, Middle Eastern or North African. It marks the first change in a generation to the way the federal government defines and counts race and ethnicity. The Biden administration says the new standards will take effect immediately. Coming up, the legal fight over the Baltimore Bridge collapse could take years. We'll explain after the break. It's only been a few days since the Baltimore Bridge collapse, and already a swift legal fight is beginning over who's financially responsible. Insurance payouts are likely to come more quickly. But maritime lawyers say the larger battle over who will pay for the damage and loss could take a decade. Here to explain is Wall Street Journal insurance reporter Jean Eaglesham. So, Jean, this is going to be a long process in some cases. There are other claims that are already going to start to be coming in. Let's start with the bridge itself. President Biden has said the government will pay for the cost of reconstruction, and the bridge is also insured. How much could that cost?
Well, the state of Maryland has insurance of up to $350 million to pay for the bridge. So that claim could be pretty quick. Other claims are going to take years and years, likely. Could be even up to a decade.
Jean, two bodies were recovered just last night, and four other people are presumed dead after this accident. What about compensation for the victims' families?
It's hard to tell. The ship's insurer may decide to pay that quickly because they don't want headlines about wrangling. On the other hand, some of these claims, and also claims from people from injury and so on, if they do go to court and get litigated, that can be a very difficult and long process. So hard to tell on that one.
Let's talk more about the claims that are expected to take a longer amount of time, including the one with the ship's owner, which insurance academics say could invoke a law similar to the one used by the owners of the Titanic. Is that right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. There's this law that dates back to the 19th century, and it essentially allows ship owners to limit their liability to the value of the ship and what it's carrying. Now, they're expected to attempt to do that. All the claimants are expected to oppose that. That fight will go to trial, likely. That could take years. And what we've got here, this is one of the biggest ever machine insurance losses. It's very complicated. There's lots of different types of claims, including for things like businesses that have lost revenue, the port itself, clearing the wreckage. So it's a very complicated situation. And the expectation is that some of these very, you know, high dollar claims against the ship's owners are going to take a long time to be resolved.
Given that this is one of the biggest accidents of its kind, as you've just said, how is it likely to impact a market we don't really talk about so often on What's News, the marine insurance market?
That insurance market, it's already been hit by the attacks in the Red Sea. This is definitely going to have a significant impact. It's likely to push up premiums. It could make more restrictions being imposed. So it is going to definitely have an impact.
That's Wall Street Journal insurance reporter Jean Eaglesham. Thank you so much, Jean.
My pleasure.
You may not have noticed this, but you may be one of millions of Americans paying a little bit more each month for electricity. The reason why? It's a little arcane, and it involves certain utility bonds that were reclassified. But how does that lead to higher utility costs? Here now to talk us through it is financial regulation reporter Andrew Ackerman. Welcome back, Andrew.
Hey, Anne-Marie. Thanks.
So why were these bonds reclassified, and by who?
The bonds were reclassified a couple summers ago when electric utilities began issuing a lot more of these. And we're not really sure exactly what happened, but Bloomberg, which runs bond indexes, they have a big bond index business, they got complaints from investors after a particular deal by PG&E in May of 2022. And so they announced they were likely going to change the classification. And a couple of months later, they did it. They've only really said they did this because investors complained and there were more of these bonds being issued.
So how did that lead to higher cost for consumers?
Because the corporate bond market, it's this super safe market. Those are very straightforward securities. The asset-backed securities market is a more expensive market. This hangover from the financial crisis of 2008 and 2009, where a lot of asset backs didn't perform well. So investors tend to shy away from them, or they just don't buy asset-backed securities. And because some investors are restricted from buying them, it's just a more expensive market. You have to promise more yield. They tend to be very complicated. Like, think of a security with 1,000 mortgages in it. You have to assess the credit quality of each mortgage. So the argument is the decision made the utilities sell the bonds into a more expensive market, and that has translated into higher borrowing costs, and therefore that the cost for these bonds has gone up.
How do observers view this, Andrew?
There's a number of state utility regulators who are very upset with this. They say they're overpaying for these securities. They don't see them as asset-backed securities because there isn't this complicated credit analysis that you need. There's no underlying financial asset here like you have in a mortgage-backed security, for instance. Florida filed a complaint, and the official who wrote the letter told us this is not in the public interest. And this comes as there have been some calls for the SEC to do more here to kind of regulate index providers much more closely. The SEC asked for comment on that a couple of years ago, but there hasn't been any other action. And, you know, maybe this will highlight that issue again.
That's Wall Street Journal financial regulation reporter Andrew Ackerman. And finally, some lawmakers on Capitol Hill are getting a lot of grief over a possible ban on TikTok, this time from their own kids. Congressional reporter Natalie Andrews says many lawmakers who happen to be parents are getting an earful at home.
I talked to several members of Congress, and they all said uniformly their kids were aware that Congress was trying to ban TikTok, and a lot of them were worried. They were worried how their friends were going to react when they found out their parent was part of banning their favorite app. They didn't want to go to school and have to encounter questions, and they didn't want to have their parents in the line of fire there. Congressman Josh Gottheimer, who's a New Jersey Democrat. He said his daughter was initially up in arms. You can't do that. That's not cool. My friends will be so mad. And then he talked to her about the congressional arguments. So a lot of them are using their teenagers as kind of their first run for explaining the bill to voters and constituents.
And it sounds to me like they're putting up a fight. And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. Today's show was produced by Pierre Bien-Aimé and Anthony Vancey, with supervising producer Michael Kosmides. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. We'll be back with a new show tomorrow morning.